Lisa Kay from San Diego.
That was amazing. My name's Lisa, I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Claremont Monday Night Women's Step Study Meeting. And I've been sober since March 17th, 1984. I'm not going to tell you how old I was because I learned that everyone's been doing the math. So no more. I moved to San Diego. I live in Coronado now. I've been here about 4 years, and it's nice. I'm from Boston. Maybe you heard of our Patriots, Red Sox, Bruins, Celtics. I am so grateful to be sober. I am a real alcoholic, garden variety alcoholic. And what that means is I take a drink and all bets are off. I never know where I'm going to end up, when I'm going to stop, what's going to happen in that interim. And it's been that way since my very first drink. I was, 13 or 14. And my sister worked for the airlines, and she used to bring home cases of those nips. I don't know how she got them. I don't know, we always had stuff in my house. We never asked where stuff came from. TVs, refrigerators. I never asked where stuff came from. So there was these cases of nips down in the cellar. No one else seemed to, be amused by them. And so one night I stole a few, and my girlfriends and I got pretty drunk on them. And it was hard stuff, like, the stuff you have on an airplane, CNC and Coke, except we didn't have the Coke. And so I got very sick. I missed my curfew. I blacked out from my very first drink. I don't remember how I got home. I do know that the police picked me up. Back then, they would just throw you in the back of the cop car and bring you home, ring your front bell and put you on the front step, but they don't do that anymore. And that's what they did. And, apparently I had vomited in the back seat of this police vehicle, and they made my sister come down, my younger sister. If I was 14, she was 9, to clean it. And then somehow I made it upstairs. My mother was at an AA meeting, by the way, while this was all going on. I think she was at an AA retreat. I was babysitting. What a mess. So I woke up the next morning, covered in my own urine and vomit. The whole house smashed, lamps, dishes. My young sister had all scratches on her. She called my mother, who was up at this AA retreat, and she had to come home early. That was my first drink. And it didn't get any better than that, I can tell you. It did not. It did not get any better than every time I drank, damn it, the same stuff happened. I never really tried to control it. Because I always went out, I drank for effect. I loved the effect produced by alcohol, and that's why I drank. And if I could drink in safety today, I'd still be drinking it. I like that lubricant. I need it. My personality, even still today, you can ask my husband, I need it. But I can't take one drink in safety. I ended up, I drank for, I don't know how many years, 3-4 years or something like that. And like I said, my mother was an Alcoholics Anonymous. She was sober 5 years at this time that I'm talking about in 1984. And I had not been home. I was living on the streets. I was a teenage runaway in the streets of Boston. And I hadn't seen my family in about 6 months. And my father found me. Him and my brother came looking for me, around the streets, and they found me. And I got dragged by the head of my hair into the back of my dad's car. He had a big El Dorado with the big tire in the back. You remember those? And he said, you know, look at you. And the disgust and the pity in this man's eye, and the disgust really was in my brother's eyes, and I was very ashamed. And they brought me to my house, and my mother sat me down, and she said, you're an alcoholic. And I said, all right. I mean, I never really denied that alcohol was a problem. I just didn't want to stop, you know. And she said, you know, I can get you into this detox if you want to go. And I agreed to go. And it was Mount Pleasant up in Lynn, Massachusetts. And I can tell you there was nothing too pleasant about this place. No, it was a rehab, you know. You went for 30 days. And I wasn't even old enough to be in a detox. You had to be 18. And I don't know. Again, things happen in my life and my family. You don't ask how they happen. But I was in the detox. I stayed like 40 days. And I came out. And by that time, you know, I had learned about alcoholism and about the fact that I could not take one drink in safety, no matter how much I wanted to. And that the only way that I could recover from this disease was complete abstinence. And it talks about that in the big book. You know, it talks about basically, you know, once you're an alcoholic, you will never not be an alcoholic. Wish as I might, I will never not be an alcoholic. And the grace of God, this was the first experience I had of the grace of God entering my life, because for some reason I left that detox and I did not drink, and I accepted step one in my life, and that is a miracle, and that's through no volition of my own. That was a gift from God. Now, I mentioned the word God, and I want to backtrack for a minute for the benefit of the newcomer. Please don't let the word God or any spiritual terms or religious terms that you may hear here scare you. Some of us are religious. It talks in the book that we find our path and we follow it. And for some of us, that is a structured religion. For me, that hasn't been the case, but I have definitely had a spiritual awakening and come to believe in a power greater than myself. That is for sure, or I would not be standing here sober today. So I just want to qualify for the benefit, like I said, of the newcomer. Please don't let anything that I'm going to say frighten you. Because I remember sitting out here between probably, I don't know, 3 months to like 3 years sober and really having a fear, you know, that I was going to end up in some religious cult. And actually, my father actually thought that this was a religious cult. He really did. And that's ironic, because I've been a member of cults. Not religious, well, I guess, you know, I mean, I'll get to that when I get to step 11 about the seeking part. But it's ironic. My father didn't trust Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't know what was happening here. And he was scared. You know, his little girl was coming here. But I came here, and I joined a group. On the East Coast, groups run a little differently. And you from the East Coast?
No.
Oh. You just think that's funny. So they do. We run our groups a little different, but for the most part, it's the same, you know. But it is a little bit different. The structure of a meeting is different, and we go out as a group on commitments. We call them a commitment, and we go and speak at other groups. So this, like when I got the letter, and like whenever I've been asked to speak out here, I get a kick out of it. I got my own parking spot. They want to take me to dinner. So I got my own seats up front. Back home, it's not like that. But Joe, thank you so much. It is an honor and a privilege, really, to be asked to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry I neglected to say that. an honor and a privilege. It's a miracle that I'm standing up here today. So I came, you know, out of that detox and I joined a group. And it was a group, basically, it was a church basement full of old men. And they were incredible to me. They didn't pull any punches, though. They told me, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. They basically told me I had nothing to add to the meeting. And I didn't. You know, I really didn't. I had drama. I had disease. I had untreated alcoholism. That's all I had to share. And they were right. But on the way to the commitments, they'd throw me in the back seat, and they'd let me talk in the back seat of the car. You know, and then, you know what they did? They introduced me to their wives. And then slowly, young people started coming into AA. In 1984, 85, 80, there really wasn't a lot of young people here. And but these men and the women really took me under their wing, and they taught me how to live a day at a time without booze, because I didn't know. You know, I went back to school. I graduated from high school sober. I was a year sober. I reestablished relationships with all my family members. When I was 6 months sober, my brother that I talked about that was out looking for me, and that wasn't the first time he was out looking for me, it was just the first time he found me. I was 6 months sober, and I got a phone call that my brother had hung himself while drunk and high on cocaine. And I come from a dynasty of alcoholics and drug addicts and mental illness. So when I say I'm a miracle up here, I mean it. Like, I'm not just being dramatic. I should not be standing here today. I joined a group. They made me the secretary of the group. I was fun watching this girl, you know, reminds me of how important it is to get active and have a commitment in a group and to feel part of and, you know, have to show up early and force myself to get to talk to people and know people and let them get to know me. That's the hard part for me. Even still, you know, I'm an isolator at heart. So that's something I still need to watch. But, you know, so when I was first coming around, those first few years, this was all really important. And I really got enmeshed and immersed in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do too much step work those first years. But I did have a lot of fellowship. And that did keep me sober for some time. You know, and then it talks about in the book, you know, I was able to, like, really, you know, do step one pretty thoroughly. Step two was interesting because, you know, even as a kid, I was raised as a Catholic, and I did all my sacraments and all that. Those of you that are Catholic know what I'm talking about, and if you don't, you have no idea. But, you know, I did all my sacraments as a Catholic, and I had 12 years of Catholic school in spite of being a teenage runaway, you know, a drinking alcoholic. So I had this idea and conception of a God all along. And I remember, like, before I would go out drinking, I would get on my knees. And I would pray to God to keep me safe. And help me to get home safe. Help me to get home. Help me to get home. So I had a conception of God. So it wasn't that hard for me when I got to step two. Because, you know, in step three, it wasn't like I had to conjure up something from the very beginning. Because I did have some concept that I was comfortable with. It was 2001. The year 2001 was not a good year for me, for a lot of us. But I was, 17 or 18 years sober. And it was just like a period of 8 months in my life where all hell broke loose. You know, I had gotten married, I had a child, my son is good and still is good. That wasn't the issue. But the marriage disintegrated. I got divorced, very ugly, bitter divorce. My father died suddenly, and my mother committed suicide. And then 9/11 happened. And I really was questioning what was happening just in the world and in my life personally. And there's a story in the big book about a guy, just the same things. It says all went well for a while, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual condition. You know, and after a series of misfortunes, so to speak, you know, I ended up being pissed at God, just pissed, and starting to think that maybe AA didn't have all the answers that I thought, you know, maybe this wasn't everything that I cracked it up to be. What I will say is a drink never really looked like a solution, but a gun in my mouth did. If you can identify with that, I am so glad you're here. Because I cannot believe that I didn't pick up a drink or hurt myself back in 2001. Or 2002, because it took me a while to figure out what the solution was. Because I didn't know. Because really, all those years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had done enough work to stay sober. I had been through the steps. I had been through what they call, back home they call it an AWOL, AA way of life, and it's basically a real watered down version, a combination of the big book, the 12-step book, the red book, and every other book that every self-help guru has written from the beginning of AA until now. And it didn't help me, all right, because I was still living in complete and utter self-will. All those years. I had given God my drink problem, but nothing else. Nothing else. I was going to handle the job situation, the husband situation, the boyfriend situation, the family situation, the financial situation, you know, all these other problems. I really didn't see any need to have God involved in any of that, you know. And it was like I woke up one day and I was just willing to take step three for the first time, really, in 17 years. Like utterly, like on my knees, begging God to help me. Because I didn't want to drink, I didn't want to pick up any substitute, and God, we all know there's many of them, right? And I tried them all over a series of years, and that didn't work either, and that only left me feeling worse. Spiritual bankruptcy and sobriety. And I met a woman. I was on the subway, I was on my way to work. I don't know how I was even dragging myself to work. You know, I couldn't even, like, shower, really, at this point. And my sponsees and women in my life were, like, coming to my house, and I was so depressed. And they were, like, feeding me and just picking me up and dragging me to meetings. And I was on my way to work, and I was on the subway, and the subway in Boston, it's like, you're like face-to-face with people, you know, which is not the way you want to be when you feel like I was feeling. And right in front of me was this woman that I had seen, you know, about 15 years earlier. Her name was Kathy, and she was as crazy as a bedbug as I was. But all of a sudden, I hadn't seen her in like 4 or 5 years. And of course, she came right up to me and she was like, "How are you, Lisa?" And I said, "Well, Kathy, you know, I'm not doing too good. I'm sober, but I'm feeling really depressed, and this is what's been happening, and this is how I'm feeling, and I really don't know what else to do. The fellowship at this point is just not cutting it. I'm going to meetings, I'm talking to people, but I don't have any real solution to my problem. And at that point, my problem wasn't drink. The problem was Lisa. And she said, well, I've been going to these meetings, you know, these Big Book Step Study meetings. I'll pick you up tomorrow. You come with me. And I went with her. And it was a very structured, disciplined way through the Big Book. And I am so grateful because that woman saved my life. And working the steps out of the Big Book saved my life, because I don't know what would have happened to me if I hadn't done that. You know, I went through the work and I found that there was a real solution. Please. Thank you. Thank you. I found that there was a solution, and it was there all along. I had cotton in my ears. You know? I had all the answers for 17 years until I ended up flat on my face due to my own self-will and untreated alcoholism. And I did the steps as they're laid out in the Big Book. And my life has never been the same. You know, this woman showed me love and kindness that I never experienced on a one-on-one relationship with another woman that wasn't my mother or my sister or like a really good friend. And we, you know, went through the reading up to page, you know, 63 together, and when we got to the third step, you know, she asked me, are you ready? And I said, I am ready. We got on our knees together. We held hands. We said that third step prayer. And my life has never been the same. She got me writing. And I did a very thorough and fearless fourth step. I covered my resentments, institutions, principles, people, my fears, my sex conduct. Left-hand side of the page, right-hand side of the page, you know. What was my part? For 17 years, I walked around here still thinking it was your fault. And I was the victim, you know. And when I ever saw the truth, what a freedom. What a freedom. And I read this fourth step, you know, to Kathy. And it took me about, I don't know, 40 hours to read it. It was pretty big. It was pretty thorough. And halfway through finishing the reading, I had a very real spiritual awakening. Not a white light type of experience, but a real experience that God was present in my life in a way that I had never experienced it before. And it's something that I can't even explain. And so that's why I qualify for the benefit of the newcomer, because I don't want that to scare you. I don't want anything to take you out the door. You know, I want you to stay here. I really do. I went on, you know, after I finished reading my fifth step to her, she said, go home, take the book down, take your hour, do 6 and 7, write your list, call me when you're done. And I did. And she got me going on my amends, you know. And most of them are done. There's 2 people that aren't done yet, and there's 2 financial amends. I finally finished paying off the IRS last year. Took me a long time. I didn't like paying taxes, see? Why do I have to pay taxes? I don't like what they're paying for, so I shouldn't have to pay for them. That was my, you know? These were some of the ways that my will led me into the exact situations that I ended up in. Why is the IRS chasing you down, Lisa? seeing the truth about myself was an amazing experience. And so now, I cannot act like I don't know what the truth is. And the truth is I'm still as sick as I was back then. But I'm not suffering today. Because I know that I'm exactly where I put myself based on the choices I've made. Not based on what choices my husband's made or choices that, you know, my boss makes at work or based on anything anyone else does. I'm exactly where I put myself. And that is, living this way is such a freedom because I have no one to blame, see? And not that I blame myself because I don't. I just own the choices I make. And it's a really wonderful way to live. It's such an easy way to live. And not only that, but the people in my life, they're not all guessing. What does she mean? Does she really say what she... Yeah, if I say it, I mean it. It's just a very simple way to live. And I love it. I made, you know, most of my amends, like I said. Step 10 saves my life on a daily basis. Now my life working 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. I have to. Or else I'll be living in untreated alcoholism again, and I don't want that. I'd rather be drunk. I would. At least I'd have some lubricant between me and the world out there. I read, you know, page 84 to 88 every day. It's something that Kathy had me do when I was writing my fourth step. Because she told me as soon as I started writing my fourth step, I was starting to live in the solution. You know? And one of the things that they say at the meetings back home is if you're talking about the problem, you can't possibly be talking about the solution. And that was really profound to me. And that's why I love meetings that are focused and disciplined and solution-based, because I cannot stand coming to a meeting and hearing a drunkalogue. I'm sorry, but it's not going to help me stay sober, you know? I need to hear what people are doing on a daily basis. How are you surviving cancer? How are you getting through your divorce? How are you getting through 5 years of unemployment, bankruptcy, you know, your kid being sick? Talk to me about that. And how do you stay sober through it, you know? Because those are the things, that's life on life's terms, you know, that I have to, through the 11th step, you know, I have to seek and I have to continue to enlarge my spiritual condition. And it's not easy. You know, I want to sometimes rest on my laurels, but there's a story in the book about a guy like that too and about what happens to him. You know, and I don't want to end up like that either. You know, so, you know, I pray every morning. I meditate every morning. And I do some writing every morning. And I get up pretty early to do all that. But it's the discipline I need. You know, it talks about that in the book. We are undisciplined, and so we let God discipline us through the steps as we have just outlined them. And this is what I have to do. It's not a choice. But I love it. It's not a task. And when I say the word discipline, it could probably conjure up a lot of different ideas to people. But after a while, thank you. After a while, what's happened to me, the discipline has quieted me. You know, it's taught me how to sit still with myself. You know, it talks in the book about being at ease and peace with myself as a result of working these steps. And that is so true. I love my own company. I love being with myself. I do. You know, I spent the whole day alone. I vacationed alone. I backpacked Europe alone. I like people. Kinda. Well, I mean, I said, I'm an isolator at heart. It's hard for me to connect with people. You know, it says in the book, that's my problem, relationships. I don't know how to have intimate relationships with people. So I do the best that I can, you know. But I am most days at ease and at perfect peace with myself. Not for the entire day, but for portions of a day, for hours at a time, I've actually felt it. And that's crazy. If you had told me back in 1984, when I came into AA, I really just was coming here to get the heat off. You know, I was sick, I was physically sick, I wanted to gain some weight, get back to school. I didn't want to be, you know, what I was turning into. If you had told me back then that I would be standing here now, I would have told you were crazy. But through practice and, you know, step 11, for the most part, on a daily basis, and step 12, taking other people through this work, through this book, working the steps with other women, what a treat. What a journey. Every time I hear a fifth step, it's like my higher power is so present. Not only for me, but I see it for the experience for the other person. And it's this really amazing experience that I never thought that I would have, you know. But I've learned that all my experience, drinking and sober, has prepared me for all the sponsees that have been put in my life. I am the perfect person for these women because of my personal experience. All those personal experiences that I was so ashamed about, so shameful about, had such regret about. God has put in my life the exact women that need to know that I experienced that. And you know what's crazy? My fourth step, I still have it because I show it to women when I'm bringing them through the steps on how to do it. My fourth step is like under my bureau in the house. And it's like, honestly, not that I would invite you all to look at it, but I mean, talk about a freedom, like of being right-sized, of feeling like this is who I was, this is who I am now. And it's really not that big of a deal. You know, I can walk anywhere with my head held high and not have to look away or look down. And that's amazing. And my life today is, you know, it's basically, like I said, it's 10, 11, and 12. You know, tomorrow morning I have a sponsee coming over. I'm going to hopefully, you know, take a third step with her. And when I do that, it's like, you know, it's another way that I'm connecting with my higher power in such an intimate and astounding level. And I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to do that. I'm so, so grateful. You know, my life today is not perfect, but I'm sober, and I have a solution. And I also know what the problem is. And the problem today still is Lisa. And the solution today still is God. It has to be. Because I tried everything else. I did not want the solution to have to be God. You know? Vacations, boyfriends, husbands, new jobs, cars, hair colors, anything else. Make me feel better. Fill that pit that I carry around with me every day, even still today. Because I'm an alcoholic, and I'm not like the people out there. I'm not. This is for me. I have to remember that, you know, number one, I'm an alcoholic, and I don't see things or feel things or react to life the way other people do. And so I need to keep myself on very firm spiritual ground. Either God is or he isn't. And it has to be that way with me. Because when I start wavering, all bets are off. I'm not in recovery when I'm wavering. And I really hope that if you're out there, and if you're a real alcoholic like I am, and you urinate yourself and vomit and break things and hit people and get arrested and black out and get fired from jobs and your family doesn't want to talk to you because you act like a jerk when you're drunk, you know, or maybe you're a high bottom. Maybe you have a glass of wine at meals and you show up for work and you drive a Mercedes and no one really knows. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This used to be for low bottom drunks. It's not anymore. And all are welcome here. It doesn't matter if you drink one day a week or 24 hours a day. I welcome you here. If you want what we have, do what we do. Find someone in this room that has the look that you want and ask them how they do it, and I'm sure they'll tell you. Thank you so much for letting me share my experience.